From Capital Analytics, I'm Abby Maloney, and this is Invest Insights. Each week, we bring you perspectives, business advice, and more from the leading executives, entrepreneurs, and investors who are building, diversifying, and leading the way in the country's fastest growing metro areas. Real leaders, real insights, right now. Welcome to Invest Insights. Charlotte's recovery efforts and future development were highlighted in our inaugural business conference. On September 10th, 2020, our parent company, Capital Analytics, launched the first edition of Invest Charlotte, the region's first and only comprehensive business report via a virtual event. At the event, Mayor Vi Lyles from the City of Charlotte and Janet Labar, the President and CEO of the Charlotte Regional Business Alliance, gave keynote addresses, and two panels discussed the current challenges and obstacles the region is facing. In today's episode, we are featuring the development panel, the future of development in the Charlotte region. That panel featured moderator Taiwo Jayoba, the Director of Planning, Design, Development, and Assistant City Manager for the City of Charlotte, Zach Panier, the Business Unit Leader of DPR Construction, Marcy Williams, the President of RKW Residential, Clay Grubb, the CEO of Grubb Properties, and Lawrence Shaw, the managing partner of Colliers International.
All right, well, thank you once again for the opportunity to be here. Good afternoon. My name is Taiwo Jayoba. I am the city's planning director and also assistant city manager. We really have a very good panel this afternoon to follow up on the previous one. I think that was really informative. That was very engaging. So I want to say thank you to that very first panel. So we've got four panelists with us this afternoon. If I will allow you, just go ahead and introduce yourself quickly. We've got a few minutes to spend with all of you, but I'll let them introduce themselves and we go right into the questions. Marcy, maybe we can start with you.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for having me today. My name is Marcy Williams. I'm the president of RKW Residential. We are a multifamily third-party management company. We manage over 8,000 units in Charlotte and 20,000 units nationwide.
Clay?
Thank you, Taiwo, and thank you, Invest Charlotte, for all you've done. I'm Clay Grubb, the CEO of Grubb Properties. We are a Charlotte-based company that focuses on multifamily and office properties across the United States.
Great.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Excited to be here as well. My name is Zach Panier. I work for DPR Construction. We are a technical builder. We focus on advanced technology, life science, commercial, higher education, and healthcare facilities, and excited to share some of the stuff that we're doing and how we've responded through the pandemic with everyone here today.
Great, Lawrence.
Hey, Taiwo. Hey, hello, everyone. Thanks for having me. My name's Lawrence Shaw. I'm the managing director here at Colliers International Charlotte. We're a full-service real estate company. We are engaged in office, industrial, multifamily, and land industrial.
Well, thank you to all of you. So you all know our audience and our panelists, this pandemic has definitely been tragic on many levels for all of us, but it also provided opportunities for us to reimagine development in our cities. And so we've all responded, we've acted in different ways, but we've got some practitioners with us today who can really talk to us about how they've responded. So I'm going to ask all of you to kind of talk to us about how you've responded during this COVID-19 situation that we found ourselves, and maybe citing examples where possible with regards to development activities. I'll let any one of you jump in.
Sure, I'll go ahead and start, Taiwo. So I think, you know, we plan a lot around what-if scenarios in our business. And so I won't say that we were smart enough to foresee this happening, but I think we also were poised to deal with crisis response. And so our immediate really response as an organization was around protecting our people and protecting our projects and making sure that first and foremost that the health and safety of all of the men and women that show up on our sites was really the first line of defense, as well as what we did to protect all of our employees. You know, I think some of the buzzwords that I heard earlier from the first panel was resiliency. I'm not going to hit on that. You guys understand that piece. I think it's the other word that comes to mind is connection and connectedness, which is weird to say while we're looking at each other on our computer screens, but it really made us connect deeper with our people. We put a task force together across our 31 offices, across 7,000 employees, and across our portfolio of customers to connect on a daily basis, sometimes an hourly basis, and to really harness that people connection, right? We're in the business of building buildings, but people are our greatest asset. And so it really was, how do we use the connectedness of who we are? That's part of our culture. And as the mayor shared, quickly adapt and respond to doing this in a virtual way, while also making sure that we could maintain essential business functions. For us here in Charlotte, you know, we were pretty blessed in terms of how our projects and our developments continued to chug along. Our offices in San Francisco and Boston were shut down for a period. Austin paused. We had lots of different areas that were affected in different ways. And we really had the ability as a technical builder to flex data. I know the earlier panel talked about data. We've got a bunch of data scientists and engineers that work for us, which may sound weird as a construction company, but allowing us to kind of ramp up and deploy those folks, allowing us to see deeper inside of our business and in turn provide a greater response to our customers is what really helped us emerge, I think, as a stronger organization than when we waded into the pandemic.
Wow, interesting. Lawrence, what can you share with us, with our audience?
And sure. Like Zach, we were really sensitive to the well-being of our folks. So we had to close our office. And in doing so, that separated us naturally. And we had to pivot to this virtual world. So we set up several calls, several meetings online within our different groups, our industrial group, office group, et cetera. Then we had our staff meetings. So we had several touch calls during the closure of our office. And then as we came out of the full closure of our office, we slowly let people come back in. We were really cautious about, again, the protection of our folks. And we still right now require several different measures before you can enter the office. And then on a more community level, we used our real estate contacts and sources to try to help at-risk children find places to learn that weren't able to go to school or had some challenges. We also were just trying to use our contractor relationships to improve buildings for these types of uses at cost. And it's been interesting and very rewarding to work with the charities and try to place these children in these different buildings and have them come together and try to normalize the situation.
You know, it was an interesting time. I mean, we had a little bit of different perspective. My daughter actually attends NYU Shanghai. So we lived it in January when her school kept delaying, and then never actually opened. And so we formed a task force in February to start planning for it and sent our first company-wide notice out on March 3rd. And then I of course, got the virus on March 4th. So I was certainly the guinea pig test case for Grove Properties. You know, it was very frustrating because there were no tests. And so it took me at least 10 days before I could get a test. And then it was another 5.5 days before I could get a result. And at that point, you know, I was out mountain biking and well when I finally got a text that, congratulations, you got COVID-19. And so I was like, I think you mean I had it. Fortunately, I didn't infect the entire company. But it was a scary time. And so, you know, we really focused on compassion, and we realized that fear was going to be number one throughout. And I'll talk a little bit about you know, what we did with our residents and our tenants later. But you know, we were quick to figure out, all right, what should we do with our team members? And we immediately said, all right, all of our hourly folks, we're going to increase those wages 50 cents. And then we increased all of our property management line folks 2%. Then we accelerated bonuses that would be coming in the prior quarter and at the end of the year. And then we went ahead and said, all right, well, you know, we need to just have a minimum living wage. And so we implemented a $15 an hour minimum wage portfolio wide and, you know, continued to explore ways that we could be more compassionate.
Mercy.
Yeah. I think really just to reiterate what some of the other panelists have said, we had to react and we had to react quickly. So when things started to happen and we started to close down, we were having calls really twice a day with our executive team so we could communicate to the regional team and the on-site teams on what the plan was. We had to create new policies quickly. We had to get them vetted and have our legal team look at them as well. But most importantly, really, as Clay said, compassion and empathy was probably at the forefront of everything that we did. How is this going to affect our team members? How is this going to affect our residents and ultimately the property itself and our clients who we manage the communities for? So again, everything just happened so quickly. Then we had to figure out, okay, now how are we going to operate in this new environment while keeping everyone safe? And then how are we going to operate and continue moving on forward? So as things have changed, we've stayed in constant communication with our frontline workers, our employees that do work at the team at the sites, our maintenance teams and our leasing teams and management teams have really just been at the forefront. How are we going to operate? How are we going to communicate? And most importantly, empathize and help protect them to stay safe.
Mercy and Clay, let's stay with you for a minute. You both use the word compassion, and obviously that comes into the conversations when rent paying and all of that comes into view. So months into the pandemic now, how would both of you describe rent collections across the Charlotte area communities, and what were the residents' main concerns during the first few months into the pandemic, and what are you hearing from them now? If any of these, you know, if anything that could be a potential backlash, what are you hearing from the communities, especially, and how would you describe the rent collections?
I would say that rent collections overall have still remained strong in our communities. Many of our residents are able to work from home or have jobs that they were already working from a remote location. So our rent collections in the Charlotte area are about 95%. Now, one of the first things that we did with April rent collections was I sent a message and a letter out to all of our team members. Again, it was on empathy and compassion because many of these residents, if they were struggling, there was panic. So they didn't know if I have a job today, am I going to have a job tomorrow? Or there was just so much uncertainty. So really, some of our residents were asking for help for the first time ever. And I really wanted to make sure that the team members had the tools that they could talk and have a dialogue. We put payment plans in place. We allowed residents to pay with credit cards and waived all credit card fees. If you can pay, you know, half of your rent now, we can take the other half and split it over the next 6 months. We really remained flexible. And I will tell you, by communication, empathy, and being flexible, we have been able to have about a 95% collection rate every single month.
Wow. That's impressive, Clay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, my hat's off to Marcy because she manages for a whole bunch of different owners. And so to achieve that, and I can only imagine what that's like herding all the cats, because every owner has a different view of how you should approach it. And so she has the tough job. You know, fortunately, among our portfolio, we have pretty much a central ownership group, and that allows us the opportunity to make decisions and implement them without having to go back and get ownership buy-in. And so that allowed us to move much quicker. And so we decided that, hey, fear was going to be the number one issue. And so we rolled out a program that said, if you prepay your April's rent, we'll give you a 10% discount, because we were scared of whether we would have cash. Amazingly, we had 3,200 residents, about 70% of our portfolio prepay April's rent. April came on the 5th. The weekend in April came on the 5th. And last time we had the 5th come on a weekend, we had collected less than 50% of our rents. So we were in great shape. That gave us a lot of confidence. We were going to be able to pay our mortgages. We were able to put all our vendors on fast pay because we felt like a lot of our competitors would be slow paying them. We actually, a couple days later, had somebody spray paint a 30-foot long sign, rent strike 2020. You know, the nice thing is we'd already collected by that point probably 80% of the rents on that particular property. And then we realized that of the 30% that didn't prepay April's rent, they were the ones that probably needed the most help. And so we reached out to each of them and, you know, waived late fees, said we would do payment plans, and said, if you'll finish paying April's rent by the end of April, we'll give you 10% credit for May. And then anybody that can show that their income was impacted by more than 25% in April, we'll give you a 20% discount in May. And then in addition, we rolled out for our commercial and our multifamily folks that if you prepay May, 2% of your rent will go to the local crisis charity. And so we ended up raising about $78,000 that went to about 25 different crisis charities to help out with that. And the final thing that was kind of the most unique thing we did is we realized evictions were closed or the courts were closed. And so we still had some people that hadn't paid March, and we reached out to those folks and said, look, if you will move out, we'll waive everything you owe us and we'll give you $1,000 if you'll move out in the next 10 days. And we had about 8 folks take us up on that. And so as a result, we were actually able to maintain above 98% collections throughout through March, April, May, and June, both in our residential and commercial portfolios. And in the commercial portfolio, we actually said if you paid April, we'll give you a month abatement starting in May for every 6 months you extend your lease. And we had about 22 commercial tenants that took us up on that. Actually, it committed about another $20 million in rent collections for those properties. So it actually makes those properties more resilient. And then we had 14 mom and pop, you know, restaurateurs, ice cream shops, gyms. And we told those folks, look, if you just pay us April rent, we'll give you 3 months free rent, no questions asked. And all 14 of those participated.
Wow, there's a lot that's gone into that. Thank you for your in-depth answer. Let me move to Zach and Lawrence and kind of shift a little bit. I know we're running out of time, but Zach, you know, Charlotte is one of the largest cities in the country without impact fees. You've probably read it in the news, his whole idea of including that as part of our toolbox. Now, in your experience, though, what is the general sense of impact fees in the development construction community? And how do you, in your experience or your thought process, think such fees could hinder or help future development in the Charlotte region?
Yeah, well, Tywell, I'm not an expert in terms of development, but I can give you certainly a contractor's perspective. Mm-hmm. I'm also, only 2 years here in the Charlotte market. I moved from San Diego, where I have a lot of experience with impact fees and what that looked like in terms of smart development. And I think, you know, we're part of the Charlotte Regional Business Alliance. You guys are going to hear from Janet when we close here. It really is a larger conversation. It's a conversation with contractors, with developers, with the city, with understanding how can it help facilitate smart development? How can it help build the community that we want, that we're trying to attract and draw the right level of talent, the right companies here that benefits all of us, while also making sure that we have great infrastructure. And I think Charlotte, my experience in the 2 years here, and I know we heard from the panel before, we don't have traffic here like we do in Southern California. But at the same point, I know a lot of folks that have lived here their whole life, and it is much different than it was, 5, 10, 15 years ago. And so I think we've got the light rail, which is certainly a big piece in terms of development where our office is in the lower south end. But I think it needs to be a larger communication and conversation, Taiwo. And I would love to engage with you and others in what that looks like, because my experience is it hasn't been a tremendous impact to development. But that's my personal opinion. And so I think we need to look at it from all stakeholders and really understand how can we continue to have a development and builder-friendly climate and culture while also managing the growing metroplex that we're in a way that is responsible for the next generation.
Great. Thank you, Zach. So actually, one question out to Lawrence here. As you know, Charlotte is a major tech and logistics hub. Lawrence, with the rise of e-commerce and now remote working, disruption of traditional retail, what steps do you think that we need to take in order to ensure that we continue to accommodate the needs of retailers, of manufacturers and distributors? And you can answer that as you want.
Sure. I think that what we need to do is take a hard look at the unzoned land that's in the western part of the county and in the northwestern part of the county. It's currently primarily a lot of that land zoned R3. And what we need to do is take a look at long-range plan and determine whether or not that perhaps needs to be considered for distribution purposes. We all know what's happened with the pandemic. The buying habits from brick and mortar have gone to online shopping. And with that has put a lot of pressure on existing distribution buildings. So in most of these distribution buildings, we're seeing our larger distribution buildings. Where there is available land for these bigger buildings is where these facilities are located. And the operators and tenants of these buildings like to be closer to the population centers. So the land that is closest to the population center that is unzoned, that was previously determined to be something other than the distribution use, perhaps we need to reconsider that just because of the paradigm shift from retail to industrial. Mm-hmm. And for the existing retail buildings that are the big box type retailers, we need to take a look at those and can we repurpose those for pickup locations or a last mile distribution facilities? The older buildings we're seeing that are well located, but perhaps were functionally obsolete previously have gotten other looks now because they are with what we call the last mile and they're close to the population centers. I think just a hard look at the unzoned land that was perhaps planned for some other types of use would be one place to start.
Great, thank you. So we have 1 minute, and I would say in one or two words, what do you think is the most important thing Charlotte's development faces in the future? One or two words, we have 1 minute.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, to me, it's infrastructure. You know, I think, you know, parking and the car are your number one obstacles to affordable housing. And so we need to invest in pedestrian, bike, scooter infrastructure, transit infrastructure, bus infrastructure, and we need to move away from that. And we need to also focus on efficiency. And one of the biggest beneficiaries we've seen in the pandemic is Atlanta went to third-party inspections. And we've cut about 90 days out on our job in the last 4 or 5 months, because when an inspector shows up, he's not just going to do 5 units and give you 30 minutes. They'll stay there for as long as it takes to do 35, 50 units. And so I'm not saying third party is the right answer, but certainly a way to make that more efficient.
Any other?
I think just do the right thing, Taiwo. I think as a community, we've all experienced coming together. And so I think carrying that momentum through the other side, and how do we come together to make better decisions that benefit Charlotte in the long term? And I double down on what Clay said about infrastructure. I think certainly as we develop, infrastructure is a place that we have to double down on.
Marcy?
Yeah. The last one thing comment. Go ahead, Marcy. Sorry.
Honestly, the last thing I would say is technology. I mean, I think with people working remotely in all different areas, I mean, just putting on the Zoom and how everything is hard. And I think, especially in our multifamily buildings, I mean, having technology is important. It's important to our business and it's important to our residents as well.
Nice.
Plan review process, if there was a way that we could just expedite the turn of the plan review, that would be beneficial. I understand Charlotte's got a lot of pressure on the plan review process, but if we could expedite the 21 days a little quicker, that would be very helpful.
Thank you so much to all of you. Thank you to our Capital Analytics and our audience. We appreciate the time that we spent together this afternoon. Have a wonderful rest of the day.
You've been listening to Invest Insights. Be sure to follow, rate, and review this podcast to hear more. I'm Abby Malone. Thank you for tuning in.